Welcome to Fried. I'm your host, Kate Donovan. I work with leaders so they can see the patterns that are quietly hurting performance and burning out their best people. In my world, burnout is blameless, burnout is information, and burnout is a signal that we can use to improve workplaces. Seasons 1 through 10 focus on individual burnout. Seasons 11 and beyond focus on leadership, culture, and the workplace. This podcast will help you understand what burnout is pointing to and how to start fixing what's actually causing it. If this is a conversation you feel your organization should be having, that's the work I bring into teams through keynotes, workshops, and advisory. You can find all my info at katedonovan.com. That's CAITDONOVAN.com.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.
Fried fam, I don't really know how to explain to you how excited I am to have this conversation today. Kristin Scroggins has spent the last two decades researching the why behind generational conflict, and it's not the stereotypes you've heard. With 16 years as a communications professor and keynotes across 48 states and three countries, she brings research without boredom. Known for her straight talk style and wicked twist of humor, she makes you laugh while rethinking how you lead. You've never heard generations done like this, and you've also never heard someone get so real about life in general and being willing to, like, I know Kristin fairly well. You'll learn why in just a second. Her ability to not skip over the hard stuff and just get into it is something that really sets her apart from other people and makes her really special. And besides that, she's hysterical and cracks me up. So Kristin, welcome to Fried.
Yay, I'm so excited. Like, this is, you're really just tuning into a giant love fest for the first part of this. I mean, I was talking to Kate and I was like, I really could just do a commercial for you for an hour in every way that you've changed my life dramatically, literally over the past year. So maybe we get to some cool generational stuff, you know, but really I just want everyone to understand that it, you know, in the same way that people used to say with AA, it works if you work it, right? A lot of burnout therapy for me has been the same way. It works if you work it, right? If you're committed to it and you do the things, even if you think somatic stretching is super weird, it works if you work it. So yeah. So I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me. You're definitely one of my heroes.
That is, it feels like too big a word, but I will sit here and I will take it. Let's start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. Yes. You were just texting me a little while ago that this day that we're recording,
one
tomorrow
day
would make a year from like the big crash.
Isn't that so strange? I literally was just doing research.
Weird coincidence.
Yeah.
Talk about the big crash.
Okay. So you and I now have a friend. His name is Will. So for those of you that don't know anything about me, Kate just told you a second ago that I am a speaker. I talk about generations. Basically, when people ask me what I do for a living, I tell people I travel around and help people understand why their coworkers are so weird. Like, that's really all I do. It doesn't seem to matter the state. Doesn't seem to matter what the industry is. Everybody wants to punch each other in the throat, and HR says no to throat punching, right? Illegal, not okay. So I am trying very hard to not talk on planes. I don't want to talk to strangers on planes. And this sweet British guy, who I think is Australian at the time, and he tries to convince me he's British, but he sounds Australian. He is not having it. Will is darn well going to talk to me. He finds out that I'm a speaker. And he, even though he's like a PGA god, he's also got a podcast on here with Kate. You should listen to it. It's wonderful. Go back and look for Will. Robins or Robbins. I don't know exactly how he says his last name, but who cares? He's just Will. And so Will is talking and talking and talking to me. I'm exhausted. I give in because he's adorable and very motivating. And so we end up talking for the entire 4 hours and basically piss off everyone around us on the plane. And so after a little while, I'm talking, I text him like literally 8 days later. I am trying to show him how not glamorous being a public speaker is, right? Because he's so excited about it. And I told him that I had 106 presentations scheduled that year. And he's all like, oh, that's so cool. And I'm trying to show him how it's definitely going to kill me. And so I shoot him a picture of me at one of these little IV companies that you can go to and get like all the juice that you need to be able to survive the next week. And so he sends me a picture and he's like, girl, you're burnout. Like, this is not normal. You should not in any way need this level of juice just to be able to survive your day-to-day life. So I thought about that. And then I think maybe 2 days later, I went on to Apple and text in, what's the best podcast on burnout? And there's Fried. There it is. And I listened to episode one and I'm like, holy Jesus, this is me. And then the next one, and then the next one. And then they hit the one where you talk about, it's like the symptoms of burnout. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm burnout. And so from then on, I was completely and totally obsessed. And then I download the Resentment Journal, which is life-changing for me. Pivot moment. I told you earlier, I don't think people have, you haven't talked about Resentment Journal in a little while.
Probably not. Yeah. It's something that I know how powerful it is. And, but it's, I created it so long ago. This is from like 2018. And I forget sometimes, unless I'm doing, yeah, the Resentment as a Superpower keynote comes with the Resentment Journal. So when I'm doing that, then it's part of that process. So people get it. But otherwise, I often forget until, like, you know, because I don't talk about it a lot, it doesn't sell that much. But every once in a while, I get a little email that says, you're going to get $31.28 in your bank account from Kajabi. And I'm like, yay.
So darlings, on the podcast, listen to me. If you don't know where to start, I think this is where you should start. Go immediately to Kate Donovan's website and download the Resentment Journal. It is worth, it's like two cups of coffee, right? But it was as absolutely life-changing for me. And basically what it does is it has you write down all the things that you're super pissed about, which it was life-changing for me. I never had ordered a gratitude journal ever, Kate, because every time I saw the word gratitude, it made me want to throw up in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like I was too burnt out to be gracious or happy or thankful for all the amazing things. And I think that this is one of the interesting things about burnout, and I've heard it over across a lot of your podcasts, and I definitely connect to it, is, you know, so many people wanted desperately to have the career that I was having. Like, people were desperate. How are you doing this? How are you getting all these gigs? Like, what's your market list look like? Where are you getting leads from? And I'm like, I'm not. I'm just going out and absolutely kicking ass every presentation. And then they come to me. And so it was confusing, very confusing in me, because I was like, isn't this what I wanted? Like, I wanted to be really good at what I do. And now while I'm on stage, I love it, but I hate every other single thing around it. I hate getting on the plane. I hate packing my stuff. I come home and I have four children, you guys. I don't want to talk to any of them. Right. I have a husband who I basically loathe at this point in time, 106, not his fault. Right. He's at home running the house. And so I do the Resentment Journal. This idea of, do you need to drop it? Do you need to delegate it? Do you need to upgrade your life or spend some money on it, basically, is what I kind of equated it to? Or do you need to draw a boundary around it? And just having that framework around it made it possible for me to be able to see all these solutions that I just couldn't see were in front of me. Because one of the biggest problems for me at that time was, and again, those of you that are mothers, and I know there's a lot of females that are on your podcast and will relate to this, is that we're out there being boss bitches, right? All day, every day, running this stuff. And we're also in charge of everything mentally at home. Even if we're not physically doing everything, we're mentally still doing everything. And so what was happening was, I'm getting phone calls on a plane from my 13-year-old saying, when is my dentist appointment and can you schedule an edge up for my hair? And I'm like, you have another freaking adult literally walk down 8 stairs and go talk to the human. I'd moved into a pattern where every time I answered the phone from anybody in my family, I'd say, is there someone in your time zone who can handle this? That's not me. And it had just become this constant background noise to where anything that had to do with my family was exasperating. And it wasn't because then they were asking me for too much or they were asking me for anything beyond the normal reach of parenting. It was just, I didn't have space to hold both of those things at the same time.
Yeah. I think a lot of people will resonate with that. And what I've learned over the years is that when people finally call me, right? Yeah. I don't do a ton of one-on-one work anymore, but when people call me and when they have called me since the beginning of the podcast, one of the main things that they say to me is, Kate, I'm being terrible to my family and I can't stop myself. So this right now we're in this season where we're talking all this stuff about burnout in the workplace and burnout at work. But what people, burnout doesn't stay in one place.
No, absolutely not. And I think you can be, and no, again, my mother has Alzheimer's, so I've got caretaker burnout on another level, and guilt, right? When I am flying, I'm missing a basketball game and I'm missing potentially a moment that I can't get back from my parents. And so there was just a lot of emotional trauma that was happening that no one else was hearing about. Right. And part of why I came to you was the minute that you said that you were also a public speaker, I was like, oh, she can get this. Because I think I told you I was working with a therapist and I was like, number one, this woman's maybe not smart enough to keep up with me because I can outtalk her and tell her whatever she wants to hear. And so I wasn't really getting what I needed. But then the other thing was she didn't understand speaker life. Like, it's such a weird freaking niche.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of speakers that are on here that are, but it's so straight. Like, no one cares. No one cares that you're sick. No one cares that you lost your voice yesterday. No one that they scheduled you 6 months ago for a lot of money. Get on the plane, Brosif. Right. So that part was just very much exhausting. And the emotional trauma that was surrounding me was, I wouldn't say nullifying any joy that went around the business, but it was canceling it out. I've never had imposter syndrome though. You know, like there's a lot of people that struggle with that. I know I'm good at what I do. I can dominate a stage. I don't feel like I'm a workaholic. That was another thing that I thought was weird.
Here's the thing.
I need the money to pay payroll.
Yeah. And you got busy and you got too busy. And I think a lot of people miss that line. Not only in entrepreneurship, but in business altogether. So this is a line that I see cross constantly, right? So all of a sudden we're doing well. And now we're doing too well. And we don't talk about the fact that too well is a problem. This was a huge problem for me in my acupuncture practice. Mm-hmm. Having a 6-month waiting list sounds like you're in demand and that's lovely. But for me personally, it was incredibly stressful having people call me wanting my services and saying, I'll see you 6 months from now because that's my first open initial patient appointment, right? Like I hated that part of it. I hated it. And so having this like too much success isn't success anymore.
Yeah.
Was a really hard realization for me personally. And I know that you struggled with it. And I know Will sat you down and was like, let's just look at some numbers.
Yeah. So this was one of our first conversations too, was, I had goals. This is one of the things when you work with Kate that she does is she's like, okay, I've got you for 3 months and we're not going to try to take over and fix your whole entire flipping world. We're just going to come up with some goals of things that we can fix in 4 months. And, one of the first things was that I had to, get out of the mindset that I was responsible for everyone and everything in the whole entire world. And I think I did a pretty good job of that. But the second one was valuing the price that I'm asking for. Mm. And one of the things your listeners need to know and viewers need to know is that I live in the deep South. I'm sure you're shocked by my very totally Northeastern accent. I live in the deep South and it's cheaper down here. That's why a lot of people have been moving down here. It's cheaper down here. And so the price that I could pull very easily in Alabama, Florida, you know, Georgia, Mississippi was like pennies when I was talking on the West Coast. And so I started trying to do time zones because again, I was getting so busy. I was like, all right, I'm going to just up my price. And then what happened is it'll eventually slow down. And that was a really huge fallacy that I totally bought into, was that I'll eventually price myself out. And that was not happening, because what I learned was when you're good, right? And when other people begin telling other people she's good, you want her. If they want you bad enough, they'll freaking come up with the money. They'll go get another sponsor. They'll go find another company. They'll do whatever it was. So it wasn't actually slowing me down until I moved to what was, you know, an outrageous amount, even for Will in California, being like, okay, this is, let's go outrageous, right? But yeah, having Will say like this. So when I contacted you, I was like, it literally sticks in my throat to say this number. Like it's, I'm pretty sure my mom, as a teacher of 27 years, retired for that whole salary for the year, for the number I was asking for mm-hmm. one presentation. Mm-hmm. And so I just couldn't do it. And then of course I was in academia for 17 years where you give everything away. Everything's free.
So, folks, here's what matters about this conversation in an organizational context. You don't know things like this about your people, because these are private stories that they don't necessarily have to share with you. Mm-hmm. And so there are people in your organization that are ready to make more money and willing to ask for it. And there are people in your organization that are petrified to get their fair pay because they're afraid that they don't deserve it or shouldn't need that much or shouldn't ask for that much or shouldn't, right? Like this happens every single day. My husband and I talk about this a lot because we've met a lot of people along the way. My husband's in a leadership position and has been for many years. And we've met a lot of people that have come through his teams over the years that are unsure of what they can ask for. And not because they don't know the market rate, not because they don't know what the job should pay, but because of some other hangups that they have in the background. And I remember a conversation that we had to have with someone. Sometimes my husband brought me in as a coach for some of the people that he works with. One of the conversations we had to have with someone was like, you have to stop waiting for someone to tap you on the shoulder to say you're ready for the next step. Like there's an internal piece of this where your job as an individual contributor is to let your leader know that you're looking for something next. And then sometimes talk to them a bit to figure out what that might be. Because a lot of times we're in this thing and we're working a job and we're doing our thing. And for your next step, you just got more speaking gigs. And then it became, that wasn't right, right? That wasn't correct. That didn't match. That was not the correct solution for you. You didn't know that at the time. You figured it out and adjusted, right? Like that's how we do things. But when you're in a company and you're going forward on a success path, often the company predetermines what your path should be based on where you start. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some amazing companies out there. Big shout out to Hannaford. I know they do this real well. I know SC Johnson does this real well. That there are companies out there that will move people into departments quite a bit, allow people to enter a new space and learn a bunch of new things within the same company, and then decide if that's going to work for them, move up in that or not, right? So there's a ton. I know like Hannaford has almost all of their employee base stays with them for their whole entire careers, even in today's world, which is, it says incredible things about their company culture.
Not
right?
Generationally like normal.
Exactly. So that's really special. But leaders, your job in situations like this is to be looking at your people and wondering where they should be going next. It's always your job to move people forward. And people, your job is to try to figure out which parts of your job are exciting, which things you want to be moving toward next, what things, even if it's in a different department. Maybe you get a mentor from that other department. Maybe like there's ways that you can get the support you need, but you have to say something And so for you, like for us, when we're entrepreneurs, saying something means hiring somebody else.
That's right.
Right? Getting exactly a mentor or hiring someone, because you're not getting that information otherwise. Correct. So you sat down with Will and you guys did some math and you were like, oh, I don't actually need to do that many keynotes a year.
Yeah, I think I only needed to have like 42 to make the same money at the new price point. Yeah. And I'm almost booked. I think I have like four left that I have to get. And I did, what did we say last? I did 15 presentations last April. I have two this April.
Yeah, exactly. And you're okay. I think the more important thing was that initially when this started, you were really nervous, right? And that's another part of this process. When you are making change, when you are shifting things, when you are talking to your boss, none of it's going to be comfortable, Susan. Like, it's just not. But if you know that you need the shift, then you've got to be willing to go through that. I remember being on the phone with you and you being like, hey, I just don't know if I'm going to make it. I'm not going to get enough gigs. Oh, I don't see enough gigs. I don't know what's going to happen. And I was like, it's only September and we're talking about next December. We have a lot of time to fill these in. And then a couple of months, maybe last month, I think you wrote to me and you were like, I only need like three, maybe four, and then I'm good.
I had six presentation requests come in yesterday. I sent a message to Benita and I was like, why everybody want me so bad today? What is this?
Like, right. Know. But there's a painful part of growth and finding your match, like figuring out what aligns for you, figuring out which works for you. There's a painful part of that that people don't like to talk about. They're like, well, you just figure it out and then you go for it and everything gets good. Oh, no.
No, there's a terrifying,
all these.
There's a do it scared element, right? There's a do it scared element that you have to say, you know what? If it doesn't work out, I just won't pay myself that month. Right? Yeah. Or I will pay myself half of that, or I will just run the credit card for an extra month. And then if it, you know, like you start to find solutions around different things that again, you can't see when you're in the thick of burnout. You can't see any of that. You can't see any of this until you get that cloud lifted. And then you can move into a place where you can do it scared, but you can't, it's really difficult to do that when you're in the burnout space where you're just existing.
Yeah. You really need support for that. So I think this is a good time to dive into some of the generational stuff because
yes.
Doing it scared.
Mm-hmm. It's very Gen X.
It's very Gen X, right?
Right. You don't ask for permission. You ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
What happens when you're raised on hose water and neglect, right? You learn, you just genuinely burn your hand on the fire because no one's there to tell you don't touch the fire. And so you learn it the hard way. And so you learn to just put your head down and happen. When you are raised in generations where you have three adults to every one child on the playground and the slide is made of plastic and the floor is made of rubber and everybody's saying, oh, be careful. That's a very different world perspective when it comes to taking risks and seeing the world and doing things. And I think that's what I'd really try to focus in on my research is this idea of, you know, every generation's made, like no generation makes themselves. So you spending time being mad at people for being exactly who they were designed to be for their moment in history is a huge waste of your time. Like being mad at boomers for not retiring is asinine. They were made to be workers. They were made to pull us out of World War II and regrow us from the time they were, the only time their parents said anything nice to them was when they were out there throwing papers, right?
Yeah.
The only value they had was how hard of workers they were. And so now the idea of us looking at them and saying, yeah, I want you to stop all that and tell Brittany, who can work at double your speed and half your pay, all your major secrets. And they're like, forget you.
Yeah.
I can keep working and go on a Disney cruise with my family. Like, why would I do that?
Yeah.
So I think us understanding that every generation has been made to do something. It's why we don't understand the Gen Zs right now, because they're made for a world that doesn't exist yet. Let me say that again. Gen Zs are confusing to you because the world that they will live in is not here, is unfathomable to us. And so we don't even know what to do with them when they eat Tide Pods and say things like skibbity toilet, right? Because they're going to be for a totally different world than the one that we've got. But we're trying to take them back to 1983 and make them drink hose water. Like, what? No.
No. Or send them down metal slides with wood chips underneath them, right?
We don't need them to do that. We need them to do cybersecurity. We need them to do AI. Now, have we lost a huge amount of social skills and soft skills that are extremely important? Absolutely. And I think we need to revisit that and get back into that idea of bringing refiners, these other adults in people's lives that help knock the edges off of children. We've really kind of disempowered a lot of coaches, teachers, bus drivers, neighbors.
Yeah, parents are the only people allowed to talk to their children these days.
And parents are freaking exhausted. So they're going to shove
because they're doing it by themselves.
That's right. Yeah. Shove the iPad in your hand when we go to Olive Garden, right? So I can talk to the one person.
With the volume on and no headphones. Shoot me now.
Right. But like, again, like I get it. You're freaking exhausted. I understand. No judgment here at all.
Oh, I have all sorts of it. I'll do it for both of us. It's so easy to not be a mother and have all the right answers.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Folks, that was a joke. I'm kidding. Yeah. Everybody.
No need to.
You don't need to write
adjust
me
your star rating on the.
Yeah.
On
you
the
don't need to
Apple
write me a
podcast.
Letter. I'm joking. So this idea of generations being made, I think there's two really important things that you do during your keynote, because I've watched your keynote and it's fabulous. Mm-hmm. And in the very beginning, you sort of loosen everyone a little bit. It's so fun. You walk out and you're basically like, listen, I'm going to offend y'all today. Every single one of you. Yeah. Nobody's going to leave here unoffended. So just don't think that you're the generation that's going to get the good news, because there's bad news and good news for all of y'all, and deal with it. And I think that that's a really nice way of coming in and just saying, listen, none of us are doing this perfectly, not even you. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. But get ready to be challenged a little bit, because if you're not challenged a little bit, we're not getting anywhere with this information. Sure. I think that's really important that you do that. And I think this other part about generations being made, I want to talk about it a little bit more specifically, because I was talking to a mother just this week and she was like, yeah, because my kid's Gen Alpha. You never. And I was like, honey, you're the mom.
You make these people.
You're making these people, you and your partner and whoever else is responsible for making these people. But like, they didn't just come out like that.
Right. Okay. So like, nothing enrages me the way when people start talking about millennials and podcasts. I mean, and podcasts, millennials and participation trophies. Yeah. Oh my, you bought the participation trophies. You sweet little, now 60-year-old, you little hippie hearts, went down to PTA and said, competition's getting too intense. I want my baby to frolic. And you decided to give people trophies for being the worst player on the worst team on the worst league in the city, for showing up to one out of the 12 required games. They still got trophies, right? And now those same 60-year-olds, Kate, have the nerve to walk around their companies and say, these kids today, they're so entitled. They think just because they showed up to work that they deserve a promotion. Well, it worked for the last 18 years of soccer, Karen. Why wouldn't it work now?
Yeah.
Right? We made them. We made them addicted to their cell phones, right? For Gen Xers, we know that there's a high level of sort of saltiness and burnout is extremely high with a lot of, again, expected to be adults, very young age. And so, and repress all of our emotions. Didn't have any language around emotions. Boomers were designed to be workers, and that's what they've done. So we made all these people, and now we're looking at every generation and we're saying, we don't think you should be you anymore. We think you should all be us. And that's dumb. Like, no team is ever going to be effective if you don't allow people. And here's the caveat. You have to not only have all the generations there in your team, they have to feel like they can actually submit their viewpoint to be part of the decision-making process, right? Like, just having your little token Gen Z sit on the board is not, it's not helpful to you if every time they talk, you're like, okay, whatever, thanks, loser, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's not helpful. If you're going to dismiss everything everyone says and shut them all down or make it feel unwelcome, then there's no point. But if we can create teams that have a strong generational makeup, we need the wisdom of the boomers. We need people who've been there, done that. So I'm in no way my pro-ageism. I'm not saying you hire people based on their age, right? You need the autonomy of the Gen Xers who are just going to put their heads down and get it done. It won't be pretty, but by God, it'll be finished, right? Mm-hmm. You need that agility, that constant ability to move and adapt from the millennials. It is their superpower. They are so stinking good at it. And you need that tech availability, that willingness to try something new, find a new way around something from those Gen Zs. You need all of that to be successful in business today, especially as we're planning what the new version of work is going to look like in America. But we don't do that. Instead, we spend all our time saying, nope, if we squeeze these jokers hard enough, they'll magically conform. And we forget that there's a whole gig economy where they can quit and be driving for freaking DoorDash sometimes for more an hour than what people with master's degrees in social work have.
Yeah. I was just talking to someone recently on the podcast, Ilana Golan, who is promoting this idea of a portfolio career where you don't just have a job. You have a little gig over here. You have maybe you have a full-time job, but they're okay with you doing something on the side. So you're working somewhere. You're also speaking. You have a podcast and you sell online courses and you're a nurse and you do like... And this is the way of the future. And the adaptability of millennials will get along with that. Like, well, we will figure that out. I am a geriatric millennial.
Yeah.
So, cool. So I can do a little bit of the, you know, put your head down and get shit done. And I can also move and shake and change. Like I can kind of roll with both. And this is another thing about your work that I enjoy is that you've consistently said over and over, like, yeah, here are the basic years and personality things, some tendencies that these and trends that these groups have. However, within each of those groups, not every single person is like that. And when you decide to treat them all like that, you are losing out on the people that are different.
Yep. You're on a spectrum, right? No matter what, your childhood defines who you are. So even if you do nicely fit in little numbers, then you're still going to kind of trend up and down based on were you raised on a farm? How old were your parents? Where are you in birth order? What's your personality? Like all these things come together to sort of make the you-iness of you, right? Generations just one level. And I think this is one of the stupid things people do with generations is they do training and they say, like, this is all you need to know about a person. No, that is one tiny level of a person. Generation and age aren't even the same things.
Yeah.
Right? Like who you were as a Gen Xer, like me and you were running through cornfields drunk, right? On Strawberry Fields or whatever nonsense crap, Bartles and James. And they, Mad you know, like, oh, my dad's, this is so funny, Kate. My dad sent me an article yesterday about how the teen birth rate is lower, lower than it's ever been. And I'm like, duh, because they're not in the same room. You got to be in the same room with each other and your boyfriend to have sex. And if they never are together and their whole relationship is online, of course the teen birth rate is different. Like that we're the same age, right? We're still going through similar hormonal whatever, but we're in different generations experience those things completely differently. So that's, I mean, age, race. I won't get into race. I don't get into gender. Like I stay in my lane. I'll get into politics, socioeconomics, region of the country. I don't even really touch, right? I'm way, way out here on my stuff. To be able, and that's, I think, why literally I have people in Alaska that say, oh my God, every word you said is true. And then literally the next day I can be talking to someone on the Space Coast in Florida and they're like, oh my God, every word is true. It's because I'm going as far out as you possibly can.
What do you think leaders need to, well, first of all, can I just, I think I say this fairly frequently, but leaders, I'm so sorry that your job got exponentially harder.
Oh.
Over the past 10 years, and you have not only to maintain some sort of weird leftover industrial revolution number things and outputs and like how many matches can we build an hour, but you also have to now have some sort of emotional intelligence and you have to understand people on a different level and you have all of these generations in the workplace at the same time and you have to, and there's accommodations.
Yeah.
Left, right, and center. So first of all, apologies that you are.
And you also have your own full-time job you have to do.
Right.
You also have your full work week.
Which
in addition
I think
to all this nonsense. But you get exist. An extra $3,000 to deal with these other 12 jokers. So,
yeah. So anyway, my belief is that people leaders should be leading people, and that should be their only job.
I flippin' agree.
That should be their only, because it is enough to do.
The volume of engineers that I work with who have become the bosses of other engineers. And I'm like, we only came an engineer because you hate people. Why the hell are you in charge of more people? They're like, well, I was a good engineer. And I'm like, that's not
that
a reason.
That does not that make you a good people compete. Manager.
But that, again, that comes all the way back from this traditionalist military. You didn't die in war. So now you're in charge of more people because obviously you're doing something right. Right. It all comes down from World War II values.
Right. So these poor leaders who are burnt out themselves. Right. They're like, they're crispy anyway. What do they need to know most about these generational differences to ease their workload?
That's so good. Okay. So I think one of the big things that I talk about is understanding the breakdown of the country and how we work in numbers is actually very beneficial to you. So one of the things that people need to understand is that boomers were in charge of let me back up a little bit. In the U.S., you have to have two things to have power. You must have money and you must have majority, right? And that pretty much for anything. When you've got the money and you've got the majority, you pretty much run whatever that is. Okay. So in the United States, when it comes to generations, you have to think which is the generation that's pretty much held that their whole entire life. Well, it's been the boomers, right? They came out, they were outnumbered their parents 3-1. They went through some stagflation, right? But then they pretty much went through Reaganomics. Like they've had decent money the majority of their life. They didn't even get smashed down in the Great Recession the same way that the millennials did. So they've had pretty good money. So they've held the power the vast majority of their life. Now, what's interesting is that their numbers are dropping. Because, Kate, regardless of the amount of knee replacements that they get or Botox they put on, they're gonna die first, okay? These people put baby oil on their body when they were teenagers to lay out in the sun. They've been harder on their body than anybody else in the workplace at this point in time has been, okay? So here's that's the first thing you need to know is they're going down. They are losing their power, and that's why they're holding on to it with an absolute death grip at this juncture. Then you've got the millennials, right? The millennials are the biggest generation we've ever had. They're bigger by around 8 million. That's before you get any kind of immigration involved, because remember, we're not counting necessarily people that have immigrated. And you're not immigrating at 72, darling. You're immigrating at 24, okay? So that number is going up. They're around 26, 28. It's on the lean. And those elder millennials like you are just now starting to make money because you're hitting mid-career. So what's happening is their power level is increasing, okay? So what's happening is sort of the fight in your workplace is naturally emerging. It's intensifying between the millennials and the boomers over whose rules are going to be the rules. It is a natural selection kind of a moment, right? Neither one of these people actually hate each other. It's kind of like if you have a kid that acts just like you and you want to be mad at them. That's what's happening. They're both born at their own respective technologies, right? So that's important for you to know that they're naturally warring over whether you can have a nose ring or a purple streak in your hair or your toes out, right? They're going to war over that kind of stuff. And then you've got Gen Xers in the middle who are about at 24%. We've never had the money. We've never had the majority. And that's why we walk around the office every day like, Marcia, 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 right? Like, I hate all of you and I do my work every day. Let's do that. You've never had any money. You've never had any power. So all of this is completely confusing to you. Now, why this is important for you to understand is that at this moment in history, literally last year, for the first time in America, millennials switched over to the majority of middle managers. The majority of middle managers and really just like lower level managers in the country have now fallen into the millennial categories, which means the rules are about to change. As they get more and more power, the rules are going to change because they have the money and the majority to basically overrule the people who have had the rules in the first place. And people are like, well, why didn't the Gen Xers do it? Because we didn't have the power, right? Like, listen, we wouldn't care, Rainbow Bright. We don't give a rip what your hair looks like. We don't care if you come in your pajama bottoms, quite honestly. We care if when you see a red squiggle line on the email, if you hit spell check or not, right? That's what we care about. And so what's happening is that the people, like the things that we wouldn't care about, we never transitioned up and high enough into those top things to be able to get rid of them. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the big things you have to understand is that, in my opinion, one of the things that leaders need to know is some of this stuff you're fighting so hard on right now is about to become a non-issue anyway, because your boomers aren't going to be there and the millennials are about to flip that room anyhow.
Yeah.
So the idea of, again, for those of you who are children, especially those of you that have middle schoolers and teenagers that have that, you understand the idea of picking your battles. That would be my number one piece of advice for you. Number one, learn as much about generations as you possibly can, because a lot of the things that you think is disrespect and that they hate you, and it's not, it's just the way that the generations have been wired, right? And then number two is you need to pick your battles at this point in time. It's impossible for you to make everybody happy. Many of us are in the middle of a weird power war that has nothing to do with us whatsoever. And it sure doesn't have anything to do with how much money you make 9 times out of 10, right? So don't adopt drama that's not yours to take, is one of the big things that I would say with leaders. Because this shift is happening. Like, it doesn't matter. The third thing that I would say is millennials are so big, Kate, that the birth rate and death rate on either side of the country is expected to balance. Like, they're huge. They're the biggest generation that we've ever had. The Gen Alphas who are coming in behind them, they'll stay small just like the Gen Xers were, because we're cycle. You're not that special, people. We're cyclical, okay? So they'll be small, and so they'll become the big superpower the same way that the boomers did. And so it's important for us to kind of understand, right, that they're going to be the ones. So here's the thing. Any organization, any industry, any club, any nonprofit, any city, state that figures out how to attract, retain, and train that particular group of people, the millennials and the Gen Zs, to be their leaders will have sustainability. And any of the ones that don't will go the way of Blockbuster. Period. The end. There is no discussion about it. It doesn't matter whether you like them or whether you hate them. They're the majority. If you don't figure out how to get them and keep them,
they're
and
taking
train
your
them
job
to be in
anyway.
Charge, you're done.
Yeah, they're taking your job anyway in five
taking
minutes.
Your job anyway. So. And if you run them all off, then what happens is you're going to have inexperienced middle managers coming in, because they won't stay. They won't have been there long enough to understand the overarching idea of the job.
Yeah, it feels like that's already a problem, right? Like
it's a
right
huge
now,
problem.
Right. Middle managers, when we're looking at the burnout numbers, middle managers have it the worst, right? Like they are burning out at rates almost twice other positions in the company. Yeah. And they are typically... What we find is that they belong to a style of people, and you can tell me if this is a generational thing or not, they belong to a style of people that does not speak up. So they are burnt out and nobody knows about it. They're not telling anybody.
Okay, good. Part of that is because of where you are on age ranges right now. You've got a lot of people in the Gen X, Zennial category, right? Who are just... Honestly, we weren't given any language around it, right? That's why we're all on a low dose of Prozac. Yeah. Because we were told to do everything and to be everything to everybody, throw our kid Pinterest birthday parties, right? Do everything, just be happy you have a job, right? Like everything, we do everything, but we don't know how to say I'm overwhelmed. So instead what happens is we go home, we drink a bottle of wine, we buy a bunch of crap on Amazon that we don't need. We fight with our spouse. Right? We eat too much. We work out too much. We work too much, right? Yeah. Because we don't know how to actually express it. And what's funny is those same people, right? Like then we are starting to give to our children, the early Gen Zs and the Gen Alphas, we're starting to give them that language. So now you've got people that come into work and they're like, I can't work today because the vibe is off. Right. And you're like, suck it up, buttercup. Right. Like, turn into the exorcist because you don't want them to have any other emotions. But when it's your kid, you're like, no, I agree. You're being bullied. No, you're definitely being bullied. And no, you need 3 weeks in Bali. You need to take good care of yourself. Right. So you run into this kind of idea. Gen Xers, those Gen Xers and those Zennials don't have the language around it. And yep. So that's part of it. So many of us are in that. So we're crispy because of that. The other side of that is you've got elder millennials right now who quite honestly are still trying to dig themselves out of the Great Recession. Still yep. to this day. And you can't outpace the inflation rate right now. Like you can't get out from underneath it.
Yeah.
And you were all told that if you just get a college degree and you believe in yourselves and you try hard and become good people, it will all fall together. And you're mm-hmm. all like, when is that crap happening? Because I am now approaching 40. I'm scheduled for a colonoscopy and I still don't have my shit together. So like, when is that happening?
Yeah, that was big for me personally. It was like, follow your heart. You know, like you have the ability to follow your heart. You can do whatever you want. You can. And that led me to $100,000 in student loan debt. And listen, I'm, you know, I was born in 1982. So I'm very, very early.
You're right there on that cusp.
Right. Very, very early in the millennials. And my parents are hustlers. So I learned how to do that. So I paid my $100,000 in student loan bills back in 9 years from a country where I was only earning, right, 4 to 1 on the dollar. So like if I was earning a dollar in the United States, I was only earning 25 cents in Poland. And I still paid back my student loans in 9 years. And then I'm like, well, no wonder I burnt out.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right? Because it was just like, it was get this next thing done.
Absolutely.
And that's it. And just like check off the box. And then I checked off the box and I fell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was like, wait, I don't like any of this. And I don't know why. What the hell is going on? Yeah. And then when I learned all the vocabulary and I started talking about this stuff, I find that a lot of people around my age, so I've created this business and this life that is not perfect, but enviable for a lot of people, mm-hmm. right? And there's some people my age that are a little mad at me for it, right? Like I'm not suffering
you're,
as
you're ahead. Yeah, you're ahead of the game. You're really more like where people my age are, right? Really more around 47 to 54 get their crap together the way that you have it together, right? They start making those bigger life choices.
And people don't like that.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, you guys know, no joke, man. I mean, we see that happening like in how many times in work do I have people that are like, I had to wear pantyhose every single day. And how dare this girl rock up here in Lululemon? And I'm like, what? It doesn't change how hard she worked today. What the crap do you care? And they're like, I don't know. I just think people should be equally miserable to the level that I was when I was their age. What the hell is that? They wouldn't say it out loud, but they think it. And then they treat them that way. It comes out, just comes out nonverbally.
Yeah.
Comes out in behaviors.
And this is why this is the same desire you were mentioning earlier is like, I just want you to conform and to be like me. Because then I know how to manage you. I know what your expectations are. Okay. I understand things. Then when you're like me, my job is easier.
Correct.
But then, folks, there's no advancement. There's no innovation. There's no change. There's no shift. Nope. There's no growth. There's no, because you're just riding the coattails and floating along.
Like, and here's what's so funny. When you start doing that, they now have a word for that they don't like, and it's called quiet quitting. Now you've quiet quit because you're not happy about not making any progress because our great grandparents were just so daggum thankful to not have to stand in the bread line. And so you in 2026 should be super engaged. I hate when people say engagement. It makes me so mad. What's the engagement level at your company? How the hell are you measuring that? Because then people aren't going to tell you the truth. Yeah, and I'm disengaged. I hate every single thing about it. I should definitely get a raise. No, you're not getting truth. Like, Hong Kong fooey, right? So don't think people are going to lack accuracy around it.
No, I don't think so either. We did an episode recently about generations, and somebody said they think that millennials are the most burnt out. And you were like, nope, I don't think so. You wrote to me, you were like, Kate, I don't know. You were like, she said a lot of smart things, and I agree with pretty much everything she said. And she's like, I love Tess. She's a fabulous human.
She's great. I really loved her episode. Highly encourage people to listen to that also.
100%.
Tandem.
But who's the most burnt out generation and what?
Gen Xers are the most burnt out.
Why?
Gen X are the most burnout because we don't have any language around how we're feeling or what we're doing, and we don't have any tools. At least what we found is that millennials, when they feel it, they're allowed to, not only are many of them allowed to express it, they're allowed to reach out to other people and express it. They're allowed to go to social media and put that out and find out if anybody else in the world expresses it. I find even like sometimes for Gen Xers, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the kind of, I don't know if you live in the mommy world that I did at the time, but you know, like I would have a friend that was a Gen Xer and she would put out there that, you know, I'm kind of struggling and I'm exhausted. And they would be like, I love my kids. My kids are fun every single day. And I've never had a problem. And I'd be like, delete, unfriend that hoe right now. That is not my kind of person, because that's not true. That's not true. Yeah. That's not true, right? Yeah. But there are a lot of Gen Xers that still play that game. I even hear it when people talk about it with their grandkids, right? The ones on the old side of the grandkids. And they're like, no, just I'm just so pleased to have any minute with them. Really? Really? You're happy that your older kids are still going, they're still going out and enjoying their weekend every weekend, and you home babysitting their kids for free? No, you're not. You just don't feel like you can express it to anybody. Right. Yeah. And you feel like this is what good people do. And so I'm going to be a good person. No, no. So even millennials being able to have the ability to put that out into the universe, they at least have the sense to create some sort of alter ego and go out on Reddit and just rip it and stick it. Right. They used, y'all used to have it like websites where you could like tell the real truth of how you felt yeah. about things. We didn't have nothing like that. Nothing like that ever. Right. So and the other thing that I think that, the one thing that I think that millennials had way worse than Gen Xers did, though, is that all your life has been documented, right? This idea that everything's been out there on social media. I'm very happy that nobody ever took a picture of me without my permission with a red Solo cup when I was 18 and posted it out there.
Oh, I was too old for that. So that didn't happen. I think we got MySpace when I was in grad school, you know, like it. I got Facebook when I was leaving California in like 2006 or something. Yeah. Like I was all at that point, I was what, 24.
Yeah.
So I didn't have that either. My life was not documented in high school or college. There's some pictures, folks. There's some pictures that got taken and are in a very secret album that you will never see. And I keep them because they're funny.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't have that either.
An interesting thing too that we see is that Gen X, to me, this is one of the best proofs of why Gen X's really are the most burnout is the number, when I do my surveys every year, the number that I've seen that most Gen Xers plan on retiring, whether we'll be able to do it or not is a whole other thing. But the number most Gen Xers plan on retiring at is 57. And they basically said, we'll sell everything we have to and move to the cheapest country we can find. We're not working forever. And part of we can do that because we were smaller. We could renegotiate our salaries. We had 401ks that we could move around. We had new things like Roth IRAs. We had things to do. But like already I have lots of friends that the minute their kid moves out, their last kid moves out, they are immediately downsizing, getting rid of everything and just selling. It's Facebook marketplace all day, every day. So this idea of work until you die, not in the vocabulary of Gen Xers. And it's because I think we know fully we don't have the capacity. We couldn't do it.
Yeah.
We couldn't do it because we've been working till we die every day since we were 18. 14. Every day has been, right? First, many of us had after school jobs, you know, all the way
out. I had a work permit the day it was possible. My 14th birthday, we were at the local court getting my work permit because, I mean, mama needed to work.
That's right.
Right away.
Yep.
Yeah. And people, and this is an interesting way to think about it because that is true. So my sister is 4 years older than me and all of her friends are planning to retire before 60. Like that's it's just, and the whole financial investment, retire early sort of the FIRE thing came out in that generation, like save everything you can, sell everything and then go play whatever. People, by the way, you have no idea how hard it is to move to a new country, but like, that's a separate conversation. I never thought about it that way before. And that's really interesting to me because the other thing that creates then is there's going to be a lot less of you in the workplace. And then the millennials will
move even faster into the upper middle management. That's exactly right. And the turnover at the top is going to be brutal for a few years.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be like, because Gen Xers are going to,
we're only a few years out from this.
I'll slide into that top thing and take that $150,000 a year and be the boss of everybody for 2 years. But I sure as hell am not doing it for 8.
Yeah.
Right. Because I don't like people because I'm a Gen Xer. And on the whole, we don't like humans. Right. So I'll do it for 2. So what's happening is you're going to have person after person after person do that 2 year, 1 year, 3 years. Right. So your turnover, turnover, turnover. So if you're not getting a really solid base of those elder millennials and those even going into the lower millennials that kind of have their crap together and even some Gen Zs, like sometimes you got Gen Zs that like a weird hop versions and they're fabulous. I love them.
I love them. Yeah.
So when you've got those people, you've got to get them ready to go into this upper middle management and be already thinking about who could slide when into high positions. Because while the boomers are saying right now, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to work until I die and blah, 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 blah. That is way closer than you think, Joker. It's closer than you think it is.
Yeah.
Because again, like the age that you think you are and the age you actually are not the same. Ask your knees every time you stand up out of a chair. Right? Like in my brain, I still could totally crush it at a frat party, but my knees highly disagree.
I had to do a squat pulse yesterday at the gym as one of our exercises. And I was like, you need to turn on some better music if I'm going to stay down here.
Yeah, get low, 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 low.
You got to throw some apple bottom jeans up there because I'm about to lose it.
Boom.
All right, Kristen.
Yes, darling.
I really just don't know that anyone does it better. I love the way that you talk about this. I love the way you share it. I love the way that you connect with people on the road. If there are people out there that are like, oh my God, she's only got 4 spots left for the year and we need to get her.
Don't worry, we can bet for 2027. We're ready. We're ready for you, babe.
How should they find you?
Okay, so go to my website at genwhy.com. That's G-E-N-W-H-Y. GenY.com, like why are all the generations weird? One more time, for those of you that are scrambling around for a pen in your car, like I would be while listening to the podcast, it's GenY, GenWhy.com. When you go to Apple Podcasts to look for Gen Y, you will come up with a terrifying murder podcast. That is not me. They're great. I love that podcast, but that's not me. So there's that. So genwhy.com, there is a whole new series. If you really are nerdy about this, I just released a brand new, huge amount of online resources, Gen Y 2.0, super affordable price point. There are online videos about generations you can only get there, all kinds of resources for leaders, directors, businesses, entrepreneurs to be able to download. There's all kinds of information about interviewing more effectively, tons of resources available to you. If you're not sure how to get started, even on the website, there is a little online quiz that you can take to figure out how much about generations you actually know. And it'll kind of lead you to the right direction. But genwhy.com. Also, come connect with me on LinkedIn. Me and Kate talk a lot. We talk a lot of shit on LinkedIn. We make a lot of people mad. So come over there. We'll say everything that HR can't legally say. I do have Instagram and Facebook, but I don't ever keep up with them because I'm an old lady. But LinkedIn's where all my business is anyhow. So
yeah, and from what I understand about Gen Y 2.0.
Yeah.
And tell me if this is true or not, is that... Okay. If a company needs this, they can also license this IP to bring into their learning and development platforms, correct?
Yes, 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 that is right. So that is 100% something that people can do. You can do the whole, right? You can, as a business, you can just license the whole thing. We're going to make it where you could just do almost like a course, right? Where you just had the online videos that you add to your own learning management system. So there's lots of ways that you can get this information. And of course you can hire me to come and speak and I'll say all those things. And, you can be like, we had no idea she was going to say that. And then we'd be like, thank God she said that.
Kristen, I love everything that you do. I am so, so thrilled and honored that you allowed me to be part of your burnout recovery journey last year. And that, it worked at least well enough for you to still talk to me.
Well, I mean, you really did change my life, Kate. And I think it's important that people understand that it really does work if you work it, you guys. Like if you're not constantly making excuses about how it won't work for you, and you do the things that so many of these podcasts are asking of you, and you it really is life-changing. Download that resentment journal. Don't be dumb. Like that's the most perfect, the best money you'll spend today.
Pride fam, listen up. This generation stuff is real, and so are all the other things that you are facing in your organizations. You will find all of the best speakers and options and opportunities right here on this podcast. So please be sure to share this episode wide and far. Leave us a review so that we can get up on the charts and more people can find us. And as always, head to katedonovan.com should you need me to come in as your speaker. See you next time. Welcome to Fried. I'm your host, Kate Donovan. I work with leaders so they can see the patterns that are quietly hurting performance and burning out their best people. In my world, burnout is blameless, burnout is information, and burnout is a signal that we can use to improve workplaces. Seasons 1 through 10 focus on individual burnout. Seasons 11 and beyond focus on leadership, culture, and the workplace. This podcast will help you understand what burnout is pointing to and how to start fixing what's actually causing it. If this is a conversation you feel your organization should be having, that's the work I bring into teams through keynotes, workshops, and advisory. You can find all my info at katedonovan.com. That's katedonovan.com.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.